You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Future Friday. Today I'm joined by one of my best friends in the entire world, my bandmate Joe Godino. I'm recording this intro about a week early before the podcast is going to come out, and I'm looking at Joe staring out the circular window inside of the Rec Philly studio here with me while we recorded it. So as far as any kind of like news or upkeep, I'm going to be behind the week. We're still, if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, so I can pay a producer to make it nicer for me, get at me at tom@futurefriday.net. Hit it up. We are about to leave for Australia on March 8th. I cannot fucking wait to go back down there, and it's been way too long since we've been there. And we'll be going to New Zealand for the first time, so that's super exciting. If you have any recommendations or cool stuff or want to meet up and do something cool, get at me, tom@futurefriday.net. And without further rambling by me, here is Joe Godino. All right, here we go.
Hell yeah.
It's Joe Godino.
Joe Godino.
Right here, drummer of the Menzingers, the band that we're in together.
Yeah, we go back.
We do go back really far. Right now, we're currently sitting in the podcast studio, the WXPN podcast studio at Rec Philly. It's the first time that we're using it for a Future Friday episode, and I'm so glad that you're here with me for it.
This is sick. It's really legit. It's like a real studio. There's like stuff on the wall for sound.
It's elevated the conversation just by the surroundings, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked Tom what if I should be me or podcast me.
And I said that you should be a version of a mixture of the two.
Yeah. So you're getting a mixture.
Yeah, you're getting a show today.
Yeah,
we're getting a show. There's a giant circular window next to us. We're inside the gallery. It's now called the Fashion District of Philadelphia, like 9th and Market. It's a giant indoor mall that would cross the streets underneath and have all the shit. Now there's all this new fashion things and like your typical new American food court where there's like faux fancy food.
I got Chinese food there yesterday.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It was pretty good. It took a really long time.
That's how you know it's good.
But they took their time, I think, is what happened.
Yeah.
They were really paying attention to
They took one look at you.
They were like, yeah. They're like, this guy knows honey chicken. We better.
Exactly.
We better do this right.
It's funny because I think that we kind of do know it. As far as like hyper-Americanized Chinese food goes, we've been to more than our fair share of Chinese buffets.
Oh, yeah. We love Chinese buffets. On tour, we used to go to Chinese buffets a lot. We would like try to stake out the right, like, you know, right. The perfect Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
We found one in North Carolina that was like the best one ever.
It was the best Chinese buffet I've ever been to. And I know that a lot of factors come in, you know, like your nostalgia, the food, the location, what the weather was that day. And I think it all aligned perfectly. And we felt,
actually
we liked it so much and we felt so bad that Eric was sick. He had like the flu in the hotel room that we brought him food from
like
it.
A to-go container of mixed stuff.
We want him to be a part of it.
I ate frog legs there.
You did eat? That's the first time I've ever seen somebody eat frog legs
at a Chinese buffet, especially
in North Carolina.
Yeah, got them. They're good far away down from there.
Yeah, they got a lot of ponds, I would imagine.
Yeah, abundant.
Yeah, very, very much so. But yeah, we used to have a practice space in an old taxi dispatch office on Tasker between 2nd and Front Street.
Yeah.
Moy Mensing and 2nd.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. I actually went there the other day after they kicked us out because they knocked the building down.
Yeah.
And it is an open lane to get to the other side street full of multi-million dollar condos.
It's so weird. And it puts in context too, now seeing that like how big our practice space building was.
It was so big.
It was huge. It took up like a full block front to rear. So it was like, you know, we had two entrances of garage doors that went from Tasker Street to like, or whatever that street is north of it.
Yeah.
Cross, or I should know this by now. But yeah, it was huge. And now seeing all the housing developments there, you're like, there's enough room for two huge condos and a parking lot in between them.
Yeah.
And we just had all that space.
Exactly. It was like a 40,000 foot building. There was it was extremely sketchy. Nothing worked.
No.
There was no heat.
Yeah.
Often there was mostly no water.
We wrote an entire album like being able to see our breath in the one room.
And Andy Clark and I had a little room attached to it that we would record bands in and stuff. And
it was
like,
it's cozy.
Yeah, it was cool. I slept there a couple times.
Yeah,
we had many, many New Year's parties.
I probably should have slept there a couple times.
Exactly. But yeah, the point of the Chinese buffet was right next to that Ruby Buffet, a legendary Chinese buffet in South Philly,
where
you
can complex.
See. Yeah, you think that you're at a civilized society, and then you go to Ruby at dinner time when they bring out the crab legs, and you realize that were nothing more than a bunch of beasts grazing, people knocking each other over after the crab legs.
It's like in like Game of Thrones when they're like, they have like the cockles or whatever they're called, right? Like, and people are like fighting on the street for their, like, I don't know.
Yeah, like that scene in Lord of the Rings when he throws the dead orc back to the other orcs and they just start tearing him apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was that for us.
Yeah.
But we just came home from a great European tour. It was fucking awesome.
It was great. One of my favorites for sure. Like in terms of just everything. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, Mannequin Pussy and Spanish Love Songs were great to tour with.
Everybody got along. It was real smooth. There was no like hiccups, which was nice. Well, we did have to, unfortunately, cancel a show due to like crazy weather over there.
Yeah, the UK enders, they're very sensationalist when it comes to the weather oftentimes because their weather doesn't vary that much. So it doesn't get that hot. It doesn't get that cold. It's just kind of like muggy. Sometimes it's very beautiful. I like the weather. It's very Pacific Northwest-y, you know, they're a little island.
Yeah, you forget how far north
nation.
You are.
Yeah.
When I look at a map compared to back home, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, but they gave very hilarious names to storms that seemingly weren't that big of a deal, like Dennis.
Yeah.
Storm Dennis.
Dennis.
And,
sounds
Storm
like
Kiara.
Yeah, they sound like nice people, normally. Yeah.
But unfortunately, the Irish Sea was swamped, and we were unable to take a ferry over to Dublin. We had to cancel the show. We're very sorry, and we will be back.
Right.
But besides that, the tour was great.
Yeah, so I can't say no hiccups, but all the interrelationships of everybody, crew to bands, other bands on the tour, other crew, everybody involved, it was just a really awesome time, and I think everybody had a great time, and the shows were some of our biggest in some of the cities, and that was awesome. To go over as many times as we have and still have it grow like that. And
totally. I feel like there were very few asterisk incidences. No one had any meltdowns. There's no giant fights.
No.
I went off with a pretty, not that those are off things that often happen, but they do. It was great. Sometimes I feel like since we now have a crew that tours with us, we have Scotty, our tour manager. Danielle was the merchandiser for the tour. Nick Harris was doing guitar tech and stage stuff. And Dave March from good old Macclesfield in the UK is our front house guy. And we had Andy that was driving us. Sometimes it feels like now we can be kind of steamrolling through the universe, waiting for people to hand us things. And to quote my great friend Roger Harvey. But I didn't see anything that went off. You know, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with the same crew for a while now too, and they're not only our crew for a long time, but they're our friends too. So it's everything kind of moves.
Yeah, except for when we fire them.
Yeah, when we have to.
Sometimes we have to fire them and rehire them again. We had to fire Nick Harris once.
Yeah, we had to fire Nick. I don't know if we'll tell the story when.
Yeah, I feel like we need his permission to tell the story.
Yeah, but he's back. Better than ever.
I don't want anybody to think he actually did anything really bad.
No, he's great. He never did anything wrong.
It was a joke that we had.
He's my ice cream buddy on tour. We go after shows and find ice cream and sweets. We both have sweet teeth.
I love that.
Yeah.
I've come with you guys on a couple of those mini adventures.
We, in the States, we scope out like the nearest like 7-Eleven if there's nothing around us to get like pints of ice cream. But in Europe, it's nice. We can get some real good late night sweets over there.
Yeah, where they have real food as well.
Where they have real food.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking.
Real sugar.
Digestive change. Besides the fact of eating all those trays of cheese and bread, I usually feel so much better being in Europe.
I actually lost 3 pounds in Europe total.
That's incredible.
And since I've been home, which has only been 2 weeks, I gained 2.
Amazing.
And I haven't been drinking alcohol for quite some time now, and so there's that to completely take out of the equation. And I'm pretty active on tour. We play every night. That's an active thing, and I'm active at home too. But I realized that it's just that's completely due what I think to diet and the food over in Europe compared to the food here. I don't really eat that much differently. I don't cut out things or either place. The diet especially.
Yeah, and there is the activity of the set, you know. But I feel like I always compensate for that and eat more because of the amount of energy that you're expelling. Like you play for an hour and a half.
I just eat all day over there. there.
Yeah, we have they just food bring around. Us food. It's like they treat American and well, all the bands like over like kings and queens. They just kind of roll out with a platter. You get there and there's like a mousy German that kind of is really nice and makes coffee and is just kind of doing stuff at the venue that you're not really sure. Mm-hmm. There's always like a guy dressed in like military style clothing, but he's just an sound engineer, but he takes his job that seriously that he's prepared.
And they leave before doors. Like they come and they bring you all this amazing stuff and give you towels and all everything you need for the day. Yeah. And then they just disappear. And that was their job.
They vanish into the German night, the sunset, which is at like 3 p.m.
The Black Forest.
Into the Black Forest.
Yeah.
Love it. But yeah, you mentioned that you haven't been drinking for quite some time. We don't have to touch on that too much today. Not that there's like, you know, dark cloud over it or whatever, but that's one thing that I talk about with a lot of people on the podcast, especially since I did that experiment of not drinking for 110 days or whatever it was. After realizing how much I was drinking and reading more about it and kind of reframing it. And it's been, for me, a complete reframing. It's been amazing. I'd have a completely different relationship with alcohol than the one that I developed over the, 18 years before that.
Yeah.
But I got to say, you look great.
Hey, thanks.
You look great. You sound great.
Thanks.
Yeah. You're very happy and
Yeah. It's
doing
it's
cool shit.
You know, I mean, hindsight is 2020, but it's great. It's been a while. It's been longer. I wish I could say it's been longer. Just in terms of like how good I feel, it would have been great to feel this way a couple years ago.
Yeah, totally.
But, it's awesome. I definitely had to like reframe the whole, thing and it goes in waves. Anybody out there that's trying to, cut down or quit or whatever they're trying to do. You hear that too?
Yeah, what is that? You hear that knocking
Someone's
noise?
Working on something. They're like, shut up. It goes away. I went through like a resentment period and like I don't get to drink kind of thing. And now I'm like, I don't have to drink. So if I can sum it up in any sort of way, that's kind of how it feels. And it's awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible to be able to get to that mindset point.
Yeah.
And it is bizarre. I always, I'm a sucker for inspirational quotes and bullshit like that. Like sometimes I'll just look them up because if I'm feeling shitty about myself or about the world. And there was one thing that you hear over and over again, this woo-woo idea of your mindset can kind of help dictate your reality. And I actually do believe that the older that I get, because the more I've seen it in practice and people around me and me myself, and that big change between like my life sucks because I can't drink and I want to, and then being like, well, I don't have to drink actually.
Yeah. It was a freeing feeling for me for sure.
Yeah.
That was the best way I could describe it is like, it encompasses all that. Like just freeing isn't like I don't have to worry like, oh, tonight I really want to go out or this thing's going on and these people want to go to this bar or this show, but I really want to wake up early tomorrow and like climb or go to the gym or whatever. And then I'm like, shit, but I'm probably just gonna end up having six beers. And then I already deciding that my tomorrow is ruined before it even had the chance to not, to start. And now I'm just like, shit, all right, now I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna have fun. It wasn't fun at the beginning, it was kind of tough, but now it's fun. And I can just go out and be like, this is great. I'm having awesome conversations with people. And then I get to just wake up and feel good. I never have to worry about missing out on things that I would normally not be doing that caused me a lot of happiness.
It's funny that resignation that exists where you hit it, you said you want to do this tomorrow, have these kind of plans, get ready, but you just resigned at the beginning. You know deep down inside you're just going to drink six beers if you go. It's not, there's no like example of where you're going to have the one and then enjoy the rest of it.
Yeah.
And that's funny because I was just reading this morning that there was a study done by some people at Harvard that showed that people on average spend up to 47% of their time thinking about the past and the future. And if you're like preoccupied that much, it's so difficult to kind of just like, how are you actually just shedding that? But I mean, I did it and still do it with other stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like to spend half of your time concerned with two things that you can't change. It's a lot of time.
Yeah. But it's fucking crazy.
A lot of time.
It's a lot of worrying and praying for something bad to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I try not to do it, but it's human, but,
totally.
It's really tough to not do, but just being aware that you're doing it is half the battle, I feel.
Yeah. Dude, I've had a bit of a giant mental shift recently, and I got to thank my brother for putting it, and my brother and my sister-in-law, Caitlin, for putting it into the words so perfectly. They said that you could think should. Well, actually, I just ruined it. Sorry, my bad. It's instead of thinking should, you can think could. Mm-hmm. So there's so many times where I would get so upset that I wasn't doing something that I wanted to do or that I knew was good for me or that was on the path to getting, you know, to the place wherever it is at this time that I want to go, and would be like, oh, I should do this. I should do this more. I should do that more. And then just the simple reframing of I could do this more, or I could do that more, or I could have done that, and I should have done that. Mm-hmm. Is a, like, for me, it's been a subconscious self-forgiveness.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even have to do some weird fucking hokey shit where you're trying to forgive yourself. It actually just allowed me to unlock that.
Yeah. I was listening to a thing recently. I started, like, meditating and all that, and it's awesome. And I think it was, I think it was Ram Dass, but he was just, like, basically, if you ever think or feel like I should go meditate, then don't. Like, just don't do it. Just
wow,
wait.
That's pretty sick.
Like, wait until you need to. I don't. I'm probably misquoting, but basically, that was the first part. Was the idea, it was just like, if you like, it may go against like what you're trying to say, but also it's just like,
no, that's great. It's yeah, just you should. You could, like, go. Be like, I could go.
Yeah, I could. And if that's gonna make me happy, then I'll go do it. But, like, you know, if you ever feel like you should, like, I don't know, just be like, ask yourself why you feel like you should.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's something that you really need to get done, then you could go do it, I guess. But yeah. Yeah, that helps me a lot in terms of that stuff. And then with that comes like forgiveness in yourself. Then you don't have to like punish yourself
exactly
for not doing it when and where you said you were going to.
Do you think the Ram Dass, and for me the now like decriminalized nature movement and some of the forays into spirituality is like, you know how all those old hardcore bands and punk bands that we listened to from the 80s and the 90s, all the people in those bands got real into like Hare Krishna shit? And like, yeah. Is that what we're becoming?
So I,
now that we're just getting into like the, not corporate, mindfulness, but like, yeah.
Well, like full disclosure on this, just yesterday I was talking, with someone and I said the like punk guy finds Buddha,
yeah,
like in quotes. And I'm like, you know, that's like a thing now. And,
Sure.
And not now, it's always kind of been a thing. And I don't, it's kind of trying to like figure out where that comes from. But yeah, we're
well on our way.
It's like, yeah, I'm already seeing it. And it's such a thing. And I don't mean that quote in any sort of negative way, because there's definitely a common theme and, throughout time of people, you know, guys in bands or whatever, and finding that, and it's there's something there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the complete, I mean, getting into punk rock itself was culty at first, you know?
I was
talking about this yesterday, that you kind of, your adolescence, you're developing, you don't have like these like deep knowledge of yourself. You just haven't had the time yet. You know, your frontal cortex isn't developed until you're like, well, fucking 25 or some shit. Mm-hmm. Whether I just pretended like I knew what I was talking about, but the,
sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds right. Nobody's going to fact check it. It's just going to look lost in the annals of the minutes.
One person
will send me an email. Be like, it's actually 26 and a half. And it's not that.
iTunes review, 1 star.
Assholes. But when you're first getting into it, it's so religious and dogmatic. Think about how many times people are accusing each other of being punk rock or not being punk rock, or describing what punk rock is, besides just like the look at each other, identify with these ideas. I just happen to like being in live music events, and I like these clothes, you know, that kind of all that stuff. And
it's just, to me, it's like finding another group. And we got into punk, it was a very positive thing for us, because it was an outlet to perceive everything in a different way and then find like-minded people. And to me, like, punk guy goes Buddha thing is the same shit. It's just like, you're like, I think about like all like different like authors and stuff now, and I'm like, oh, they're in the club, and now I'm like trying to get in the club.
Right. Exactly. You're like some kind of like a new frame. I'm not even necessarily looking for a framework. I'm looking for the knowledge to add to my own framework and see like what works, what doesn't work, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. Some of that shit, you know, even traveling does that to me. When we went to Japan for the first time, that changed me so much. Just being able to observe how that culture that we were exposed to, and society that we were supposed to, literally we were there, was westernized from a pop culture standpoint and a technological standpoint, or you know, humanized or whatever you want to call it. But there was that those Eastern ideas of collectivism that we don't experience in the United States that like just blew my fucking mind. The fact that there's no trash cans anywhere. There's retirees doing seemingly purposeless or unnecessary, not purposeless, there's very purposeful, unnecessary jobs everywhere. Like on a construction site in the street, there'll be two older gentlemen holding like airport runway tarmac batons.
Yeah.
And they like stop people anytime a piece of machinery moves out on the sidewalk and shit like that. And they just kind of stand there all day, and that's they're the catcher on the sidewalk. To a sense. And then you have everybody wearing masks, you know, typically you walk around Chinatown here, you'll see a lot of Asian people with like a surgical mask on. And I asked Mizuki, who brought us over there, about it. Well, like what the deal was, I was always wondering. And he said that it's not to stop yourself from getting sick all the time. It's more so a way for you to not get everyone else sick.
Yeah.
And just like thinking about that as an American, where we live in this fucking sick world of get what's mine. It's just an interesting turn of phrase.
One aspect, the mask thing, like changed so much in my head of the culture there. Yeah. That was what, like 3 years ago now we went.
Yeah.
And it was, I think about it probably every day.
Yeah.
Me actually, Nick, our guitar tech, we have a joke where like if he's ever eating like sushi or like anything Asian or whatever, I'm just like, oh. And then I've told him so many stories about Japan that he's just like, oh, you've been to Japan? And we have this whole running joke because I just don't even realize. Kaylee too, my girlfriend, she's the same way. She's like, it started out as like, tell me about Japan. Like, oh, what do they do? You know, like if we're at like, I don't know, whatever we're doing, but that's associated. And she's just like, and now it's like, I know, Joe, I know we have to go. You're right. But I know you were there.
You were there.
That's awesome.
That story. Yeah. I love that so much. That was such an incredible, incredible experience. Yeah, man. So we've known each other for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
Your great aunt was my grandmother's best friend. Growing up in the Bellevue section of West Scranton, that's Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. A lot of people that know us and are close to us know the story, but a lot of people don't. And, I have like pictures at my house of our, you know, family, family members in the 50s, like hanging out together as like children and stuff. And it goes back really far. It's
crazy. Yeah. I remember it was such a very stereotypical Scranton Irish Catholic situation at my grandmother's house, where every Sunday or whatever, it would be your great, your aunt Jeannie Reardon, their closeted gay friend who was always there with like a different friend and had like bright red hair and was super, super fabulous. And I wouldn't really realize that when I was a kid. And I think I'm like 99% sure about that, not to just frame it that way. And then a priest would be there, you know, the local priest would be hanging out.
Yeah.
And then just like a couple of the people,
shaman.
And they would all just be sitting, the shaman. Yeah. And they would all just be sitting around getting drunk and playing with tin whistles and shit like that.
It's hilarious. Yeah. And I remember as a kid, both of our my aunt and Tom's grandmother have passed now, but I remember when we were kids, there was a lot of parties.
Oh yeah.
And being kids running around and just being like, everybody's so happy, and just realizing everybody was just drinking.
Everybody was wasted.
They were just drinking. And we were just like oblivious to it. But now thinking back on it, it's really funny. Like they had some good times.
Yeah. I think that put it right away, that they worked hard and they played hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause they all started their own businesses and did all that shit, and they played really hard.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we go back. So then, you know, when we started the band, we had already been playing in another band before that.
Yeah.
So we've also been playing music together for a really long time.
So long. And there's definitely, I always forget after we don't jam for a couple weeks, then we go back in and jam again and realize how great we are at, you know, all four of us being it. We'll brag a little bit. We've been playing together for like fucking 15 years.
Yeah,
little things and stops and intuitive kind of while we're writing and intuitive jamming and shit like that is so fucking fun to be able to do that. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, we honestly literally don't have to talk to each other about things. We just can play them and finish each other's sentences in a musical way.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's pretty crazy at this time. I mean, we've been in this band 15 years, and then we played for a few years before that. So, you know, we're probably going on like 20 years of playing music together.
Yeah.
And that's, it's a long time to like speak a different language to other people. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Understand it pretty well.
Totally. I feel like some of the best songs that we've written came about that way as well. They were always not the rule that the greatest songs that we've ever written were done in 2 days, but some of the best songs that we've ever written were just kind of like, oh, we'll do this, this, and this. Everybody knows we're going to do this part. That feels incredible. Everybody's like just rolling through it. And then next thing we know, the song's just done.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely hit some strides. Like there's always that weird like day or two going back to jamming or like writing a new album or whatever we're doing where it's like you kind of have to get your footing a little. But like after that, we hit that stride and I feel like it's, yeah, it just moves along really naturally now.
It's yeah, awesome. Man. It's so goddamn sick. But yeah, so I'm so stoked that we're doing this podcast. The original idea that I had that is, I love playing in a band and living this lifestyle because I have so many pipe dreams and then some of them manifest and some of them don't. Some of them are outrageous and unworkable and you got to get grounded by you guys and our manager, Tim, and stuff to be like, no, that's a dumb idea for this reason, this reason, and this reason. But my original idea was to talk about our favorite UFO and paranormal experiences that happened in the places that we were going to on the tour to record while we were doing it, which is, I don't know about you, but my plans for tour are always dashed every time. I'll bring like 3 books on tour, read one.
Yeah.
I'll bring like equipment to record a podcast and not record it. I'll bring like sporting equipment and not use it. It's just a comfort thing of having it there and then realizing that there are only so many hours in the day.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I try to like, every tour, though, I think you get better at it. And every time we travel, you get a little bit better at, like, used to just pack so much because I was like, I'm going to need all of this shit all the time. But then you realize you don't. And so it's just like, you know, mentally and physically packing less every time you go. And you just kind of, you know, now I'm like, all right, I'm going to bring that book and I'm going to bring that piece of exercise equipment because I'm actually going to use those.
Yeah,
I know what it's
yeah.
like to just have that whole bag of stuff that I'm not going to use and it just gets in the way.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, but it's, I mean, the allure of just like being in all these different places every day and being able to do all these things, it's like, it makes sense, you know? And then you get into the daily routine of a tour and you realize like, sometimes you just feel super lazy.
Oh yeah. Sometimes you need to be lazy. Yeah. I mean, you're like the emotional energy that you have to expel for playing the set in front of all those people, which is incredible. And I'm not even remotely complaining, but it does make you tired. And just the constant traveling and the uncertainty of what you're going to eat. Like everything just gets so fucking tiring.
Yeah.
But, it is beautiful. Now that we're in a bigger band, it's so much easier. We're so fucking lucky. I love it.
Yeah. It's, we're definitely at a point where, you know, some of the stresses of travel and stuff are still there, but they're definitely alleviated or just less intense than they used to be.
Yeah, mitigated partially.
Yeah, I mean, we can have more crew. We can have more people helping us that, you know, to free up time in our days, which is nice. And they work super hard all day to make sure everything runs so smooth. And then, so yeah, that's the like temptation to just be like, I'm going to do all this stuff is even more now because we have a lot of free time.
Yeah. More time,
more time than we have had in the past. So it's also like trying to learn and figure out what to do with all that time, you know?
Yeah, totally. But, so you just, can you tell me about your UFO sighting?
Yeah.
Let's dive into this shit.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Both of you and I have been super into the pop culture, aspect of UFOs various paranormal things ever since we were kids, you know, with like the X-Files or all the movies.
I remember watching Stargate for the first time in your parents' basement.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That was one of the only, so my dad worked for Weah Manufacturing in, I think it was Oliphant, Pennsylvania. And it was one of the first and most, prolific by volume, manufacturers of CDs and DVDs in the country. So when DVDs first came out, they took a DVD player and passed it around between the families of like everybody who worked at the place. And the first one we watched was Space Jam. It was like,
nice.
You guys aren't going to believe it. There's a movie on a disc.
Yeah.
And the quality isn't crazy. But one of the few movies that we had was Stargate. Cause they just like, got it. He got that for free or whatever. A couple years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so before that, even I've always just been into like sci-fi stuff as a kid. I mean, what, you know, I guess I could say this, confidently, like what kid isn't in like into like Star Wars or whatever. Like there was always something like,
yeah, it's like a space. It's just, it's a story that's set in space. You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Space, so I don't think I was like alone in that for any, to an extent, but like, I do feel like that I took it, and kind of ran with it for like, even up until now, I still am just obsessed with like, any like a lot of different things in sci-fi. And that then at one point turned into like the real life sci-fi of like, you know, UFOs and conspiracies and stuff like that. But
yeah,
but it's an interesting thing. And I've been trying to read more books on it and stuff to try to get more of a grounded view of it too. Cause it can get kind of go in a lot of directions. But when I was around 19, 20, I saw some crazy stuff that I still to this day cannot explain or have seen anything else like. So that kind of moved me along in that direction even more so than I was before. But yeah, I was delivering for a pharmacy at the time in Scranton. And we
Prescription Center.
We all worked there at some point, I think.
It's probably still open.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I did just drive around during the days, and I had like night shifts too, where I'd drive around to different nursing homes and stuff and like drop off people's prescriptions for the day. And this one particular place, I used to bring friends too, which is...
Yeah, I used to ride with you. We would literally, quite literally, just smoke a joint on the drives and kind of hang out. And I mean, what else do you do when you're a teenager? You just sit at places.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
and just drive around anyway. So I was getting paid for it, which is nice.
Yeah.
But I remember I had a different friend with me at the time, and I was like, hey, you want to go on this drive with me? It was like a place about 20 minutes out. And it was this big nursing home, and you had to drive up a hill, and it was kind of set on top of a hill in like... toward up a hill in Scranton where you can kind of have a really crazy view of like the valley of Scranton and all the little neighboring towns. So you can kind of see out and all this. And I pulled into the parking lot and parked the car, and I got out of the car to get like the bins out of the back. And in front of me was like the view of the whole kind of valley, and you could see all the lights of the city, and you could see like downtown Scranton and all the little neighborhoods. And behind me was like the entrance to the building. And there was like, from what I remember, it was like 5 to 10 nurses outside, like on like a cigarette break. And so I'm getting the stuff out of the thing, and I'm like in the car, like half in the car, getting the stuff out. And behind me, I just hear one of the women be like, what the hell is that? Or something like that. And so I look back at her, and they're all like pointing at the sky. And me and a friend of mine that I was with, we turned around and looked, and there were these two orange dots in the sky, from what I remember, about like if you were to hold your finger up, like dime size in the sky. And they started up really high in the sky, and they were next to each other, and they were both like moving downward, and like kind of like movement where like one would go like ahead of the other one, and the other one would kind of catch up, and one would just kind of like go slower, and then the other one would go a little quicker. And they just like made that motion for a while until they got to like right above the skyline, you know, and they started moving left and then going back.
So they were
up
going
again.
Vertical, and they just immediately started doing laterally.
They went laterally and then back up again until they finally did the same thing, but in reverse, just like one would go higher than the other, one would go on top, and then they would kind of like go back and forth, and then eventually just disappeared. And I don't remember if it was disappeared because of like the height, so they just like, you just weren't able to like slowly like not see it anymore, or if it was more of just like a disappear. I think a problem with thinking back on any stories like this is like you start to fill in the blanks yourself of what you would, what's the easiest to explain or what is what you remember. But I don't want to say that because I'm not confident in it, so I don't want to just say whatever. So I don't remember how they disappeared, basically. But it was crazy. It was unusual movement. They weren't planes, because planes, I mean, we see planes every day in the sky. You know what a plane looks like. So you can immediately just move that out of your brain. And yeah, they were just orange dots, and they moved quickly and erratically.
So fucking cool.
So after that, I remember I had like a flip phone, and I took a picture of it, and I came back to the house. And
I remember you having
and all it was like a grainy picture of like, could have been a street light. Like there was no context. There was but that's what we were working with at the time, unfortunately, because now I would have had a video.
Yeah, you would have the sickest video.
God. And that bums me out, because all I have is a story, but it changes your mind a lot. Like, I want to believe that this stuff is real, so I'm biased, of course, but like,
I mean, you don't know if it was an extraterrestrial vehicle, an interdimensional being, an aerial phenomenon. It could be the fucking weather, like all that shit, but still, like,
yeah, that's the other thing, is we have no idea. And you just have to keep your mind open to that. Like, it could be, honestly, be some, so, could be anything. And just there's so many things that we just don't understand yet. So I want to keep an open mind. But it was just, you know, it was like, and I've never seen anything like it since. You know, it's never anything that I thought could be like replicated in anything else. It didn't seem like anything else to me. Like, the obviously the only thing that should be in the sky is a plane.
Yeah.
Like, if it's not a plane, then what is it? You know, a plane of some sort, or an aircraft of some sort, military or commercial or whatever. But so to me, I was just like, well, that was weird. And that I can't begin to imagine what it was, but it was definitely strange.
So fucking sick. I have, I'm yet to have my own story, but I have a feeling that I will someday. But yeah, speaking about getting into to books and stuff, I know we both read, and I would recommend this book to anybody who is interested in the UFO phenomenon from any place, angle, you know, whatever, would be the UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities by Dr. John B. Alexander.
Yeah.
There's a retired colonel in the Air Force. And I guess basically the point driven home by that book, so he cites a bunch of things and cites a lot of evidence of mostly concerning intergovernmental memos and shit like that, and letters, and some ad hominem, not ad hominem, some, not ad, what's the word for anecdotal shit.
Yeah.
So he, but he basically is like, listen, we're hiding shit, but not necessarily because of the access to technology or some of the other common conspiracy theories, or that the world is run by reptiles or whatever. It's just that the people within those governmental agencies have no idea what it is and don't know how to handle it. And they're just like, well, I'm not, and don't want to handle it, or don't have the capacity to handle it. So we're just like, fuck it.
I've read that book. We both read it, and it's awesome. And I'd say it's a good starting point, only because it comes at it from a not a fanatical point of view at all. And you don't have to feel like somebody's trying to make you drink some Kool-Aid. Like,
he's
like an extremely intelligent person. So much so that, like, I have a hard time following it sometimes, because he's you can tell he's so incredibly experienced in so many things that, like, it almost goes beyond like what we can understand as just non-military, as
it's a little dense for sure, and it's good to I would recommend reading it on Kindle so you can like highlight shit and look it up, or
it definitely should be like researched as you go.
Totally.
But I love it for that reason, because it comes at it from a very like real standpoint. And his biggest thing, I think the narrative through the whole book, is that a lot of people want to believe the Men in Black kind of like government, black government thing, like secret government. And like, not that I don't think that there are some things that are kept in their own places that aren't completely visible to us, but he just explains from like a bureaucratic standpoint how it's like really, really hard to just have something that big be that covered up.
Yeah.
And if that explains it well.
So, but I think it's a great entrance point for that kind of shit, especially because some of the other books that we've read, and some of the other places that you'll find this information on the internet, is full of people who research this all day. And you can be extremely alienating in your presentation if that's your life, because you're like, well, you know, like you could hit somebody with so much shit that changes their paradigm and worldview concerning, you know, UFOs and alien contact and government cover-ups, that like, it, of course, it's going to get thrown away immediately. You're going to be turned off by it. You know, like, if you start talking about fucking central bankers when in a UFO book, immediately it's going to be a tough one to swallow.
Yeah. You definitely have to have an open mind, I think, generally, to get into this. But I think there's good starting points, and I think that book is one because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the stigma around it is so intense. I look at it as like the way that we've watched movies concerning aliens and stuff like that, created by, you know, like the Spielberg movies and shit like that, is the way that we view the world is so colored by that, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, that it blurs the line between reality and fantasy in a good way and a bad way. I think in a bad way, in that we are less likely to take real evidence into consideration, and in a good way, in that it opens you up to the possibility on the same side of the two different sides of the same coin. And I mean, in the beginning of it, the U.S. Air Force investigations and the U.S. government's investigations, they did consciously try to not humiliate, but to discredit witnesses, like, you know, the Project Blue Book. And I think it was J. Al Hynek that would go on TV and be like, you know, the whole swamp gas phenomenon, some of those ridiculous things where you would consider a experienced pilot's view of something and explain it just, you know, in an absurd way. So it's, you know, not like it wasn't a concerted effort, whether it was to stop people from panicking or actually hide contact or whatever it was. It could get so far down that rabbit hole, man.
Yeah.
Even the one, so you just finished reading Unacknowledged, right? Which is Stephen Greer, Dr. Stephen Greer put that together.
Yeah, yeah. It was a documentary. I think it's on, I mean, you could find it online very easily. I don't know what streaming service it's on now, but it actually like did really well on, I don't know if it was like iTunes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I bought it when I pre-ordered. I watched it. I had a little party with Jeff Riddle and Connor.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome. So, yeah, I watched it a couple of years ago, and then I was gifted the book by Kaylee, my girlfriend, her parents for Christmas.
So
they
sick.
Know I'm into that stuff. And, like, yeah, yeah, it was awesome. So I read it, and it's all just accounts of the, basically the whole book is just accounts of military or government officials, or not even like for the whole span of people that are lower level to people that are very high level, like with insane clearance levels and stuff.
Yeah, the former Secretary of Defense of Canada. You had like Apollo astronauts as part of it. It's talk about a fucking polarizing figure. That guy, Stephen Greer, put together he was the director, the founder, whatever, of the Disclosure Project, which had a I watched a National Press Club press conference, and I think it was in the summer of 2001 where they brought all these witnesses together to talk about it, and they made a documentary of it. And that was how I first watched it, was the early days of going around conspiracy theory message boards on the internet and like waiting for 24 hours to download an hour long video and then watching it blurry. I remember buying a PCR card so that I can get the audio visual outhook to the television and we would hang out.
I remember we watched it.
Yeah.
Or tried to.
We either watched it at my parents' basement or your mom's house.
In high school.
Yeah, we were in high school. It was wild. I was super into it. But that guy has now gone on to, it's so polarizing online. People, you know, he did that. Obviously, it was a really difficult thing and a huge feat to put on to get all of those witnesses together. And now he is constantly asking for money to do these meetups where they claim that they're making contact with like interdimensional beings
in a telepathic way.
Yeah. And even if they are doing that, which I don't necessarily, I mean, I don't think they are. I don't have any reason to believe that they are. That's so fucking hard to swallow for everyone.
Yeah, that's like, so conveniently, he leaves that for the last part of the book.
Of course, yeah.
Which got me at the end, and I was like, cool. You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. But yeah, so that's at the end. That's tough when you go down that route. It's kind of like, you know, you can be so credible and then you say something like that and you can't just expect, I mean, who the hell knows, but you can't just expect the average person that's just researching this stuff to just like be able to be okay.
Yeah. The meta analysis of the motivation of the aliens is always one of my favorite arguments against the visitation of extraterrestrials. It's like, well, we would have seen them, or surely they would have contacted our leaders. And it's like, how could you possibly take anything that we've done from the an evolutionary point of view on Earth, the way that we structure our societies, the way that we interact with each other, the way that we do any of those things, and apply any type of discernible motivation or behavior to an alien that would have, or, you know, a collective being, group of beings, or whatever the fuck it is that would have evolved somewhere else, or possibly on a higher plane of consciousness or whatever. So the truth, it probably is more bizarre than what we came up with. It could be, you could probably sit there and fucking meditate and talk to an alien, who knows? But
yeah, I mean, like, why, you know, why not? Yeah, and that's specifically why I like those two books, because they touch on those two, that aspect of what you just said, like, a lot. Basically saying, like, to put some sort of motive to this is just wrong. And any time that they do put a motive to it, it always has pretty common themes. And a lot of that is, you know, one of the big themes is it always kind of surrounded some kind of like nuclear situation.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring that up.
Nuclear sites or in air, or like places where they purposely like let off nuclear bombs or whatever. And so that is, I mean, if you were going to put a motive to it, both of those books touch on that pretty consistently. And it's funny, all the in Stephen Greer's book, it's all just testimonies from people from all over the military and government. And that is such a common theme of people that don't know each other. You know, he's interviewing people from all over the place. And that is a common theme where it's like, I was a guy working at this nuclear plant, this is what happened. And then another guy. So it's like, if there were a common theme and a purpose or motive, I guess, you know, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, exactly.
Of how dense that, that situation is.
Yeah. And the surge of sightings, you know, coincides with, our capture technology and the more time that we, like video cameras and shit like that and radar, and the more time that we had spent in the air, but also, from a statistical standpoint of collecting the reports and the reported UFO instances after the detonation of the nuclear weapons in the late 1940s, there, the mid 1940s is what kind of where it kicks off. So yeah, it does seem like that might be motivated. I think that they use the analogy, somebody uses the analogy of like they found the kids playing with matches and they're like, okay, well,
yeah.
We should probably either take the matches off the kids or see what they, you know, make sure that they don't destroy the entire fucking world with nuclear missiles.
Yeah, or beyond, you know, like, I mean, who knows how, you know, like the way that that can travel, you know, it's like it could be detrimental to not just our world, but beyond that. You know?
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And like, I don't know. So they're just like, yeah, do what you want with your little space, but fuck up the rest of the universe.
Yeah, exactly. Leave us alone.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that that's like probably the I mean, people want concrete, something concrete, and especially I think for like skeptics or people that are very skeptic, like they need, it's always those questions like, why do they land on the White House lawn?
Yeah.
It's like, because the White House is not the White House to them. Like, if and we're calling them as if they're just people like us.
Do you
us.
Go
it's
and
like,
ask the aunt to take you to the Queen Anne, or do you just observe it, or do you pour gasoline on them and destroy them because they're going to destroy your house?
Yeah, totally. So it's, you know, and people, I don't fault anybody for thinking like you want something concrete and you want something with evidence and hard evidence, and that makes sense. And so do I want that too, but it's just like, it's, if that were going to happen, it would have.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah,
it's not
totally
the way it's going to go.
I mean, there are some serious, when it comes to evidence, that's what I was going to ask you next was, from your memory, what are some of the biggest, events or instances that are kind of really push you along to be like, all right, I think that they have visited or are visiting, or that there's, this should be taken very seriously. For me, it's the nuclear armaments one, where there's so many instances of the inexplicable shutdown of intercontinental ballistic missiles occurred during the observance of a weird aerial phenomena. You know, like it's how a UFO shows up, some fucking 18-year-old kid is outside pissing his pants on the radio, and then the nuclear weapons start to shut down. And I think that's a pretty crazy event that you should definitely research. It's one of the biggest ones for me, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's really high up there. Other than that, it's hard to think of anything as consistent that's happened.
Yeah.
Because there hasn't been any, I mean, this is in my like somewhat limited, not I wouldn't say limited knowledge. I probably researched this enough to have, would be, have been able to see if it were there, any other things as consistent as that.
Yeah.
As nuclear, like
with the documentation,
happening,
with the anecdotal evidence from the people that were there, with
like it would be like, you know, if they were constantly following commercial airlines, which have happened, a lot of pilots have come out and said that they've seen crazy stuff. And
the Japan Air, Japan Air incident.
Yeah,
Fuck, that's insane.
But if that were happening like every day, or even every like a few times a year, that were that documented, I'd say like maybe there's something there that I don't know. I just feel like basically what I'm saying is I think that that is the most, the anything involving nuclear activity is the most common theme that I know of. So I'd say that is probably a really good place to start.
Yeah, totally. The there's something in the news recently that we were receiving a repeating signal. One of the, I don't think it was SETI itself. I should have researched this article before. I knew I wanted to talk about it, and I completely forget a lot of what I read about it. But that is super fascinating. I went to go see, remember Contact?
Yeah.
So I went to go see the Dr. Speak. She was who Carl Sagan based the character Jodie Foster's character.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she gave a talk at one of the old lecture halls at UPenn, and I went with, like, nice. Old Jeff Riddle, and I think Augusta, and I think Matt came, and it was fucking awesome. But she brought up an amazing point while we were doing it. So first of all, they're finding so many planets in the Goldilocks zone of star systems, like tons. They didn't think there were that many. Now they're finding more and more that they can count because the detection technology has gotten so much better. But even so, when they started SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, in like the 60s or 70s or whatever, I love this podcast idea that I could just spit shit out and not have the exact date because we're not journalists. We're like rock and roll people.
We're just talking.
Yeah, we're just talking shit. But yeah, so there's a hilarious giant beetle flying around here. It looks like a stink bug.
Whenever it lands, it's like loud. It like makes a thump. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I think it's the
room so
dead.
Some like armor.
It's a alien robot watching us.
Yeah, like
just in the room, making sure we don't hit anything on the head too hard. But in the 60s and 70s, when they started doing that, they were using technology searching for radio signals and radar stuff on the other planets. And then we, as humans here on Earth, quickly stopped using that technology as much. So the idea that we were looking for that as a signal of intelligent civilization being there was already outdated. Got outdated pretty quickly. So they are trying in these new approaches where they are using interconnected computer power and searching for atmospheric content. It's pretty fucking sick. I think that it's kind of gonna hopefully snowball into the situation where we're starting to see all kinds of wild ass planets that are what we consider to be habitable by our biological standards.
Yeah, that was one big thing that opened my eyes, and I think it was in the John Alexander book where he talks about what you just said, like we're searching for radio signals, which is just something that we've only in the grand scheme of things just discovered ourselves and have put to use. And now it's already kind of like it's being replaced by other things. But yeah, that was like a big thing. And I thought like the idea that like, so one of the big questions I have is like, how do we know so much about like these planets or like stars that are so far away that we can only observe through like a telescope or just some sort of like other activity that, you know, is watching them for long periods of time.
Yeah. It's like not how even do we visible light spectrum most of the time, you know, looking for different types of radiation and
but how much you can
posit them later.
Yeah. Yeah. How much they can find out just by, knowing what it's like emitting, you know, and I don't know, I guess I'm kind of hitting a wall with that. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, but also I just think that it's like crazy that, yeah, we're looking for a signal that it's like, when I just stopped and thought about it, I was like, yeah, why would it be that?
Oh yeah.
Signal.
I mean, think of the it brings to mind for me, the technological discrepancies that exist between groups of humans on Earth. There's a credible YouTube video of some Amazonian researchers that go out into the Amazon and they find a tribe of people that are unconnected to the connected tribe of all of us out here, you know, telephones and video and all that shit. And the economic connection, and they show them like a mirror and a video and a match, and everybody starts freaking the fuck out and losing their minds. And if that just kind of discrepancy can exist between people that are like, you know, a 2-hour plane ride away from each other, then our looking for technological triggers seems to be, not to be fatalist, but just seems like a bad idea. I'm also not a scientist in any means, shape, or form. I understand that if you're spending millions and millions of dollars, these people have a plan and they have a great call to it. It's just so fascinating. Like, what are we going to look for? Psychic waves? You can't measure that shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, totally. I just think it just comes down to, like, whatever. It's like throwing the net out there and whatever comes back is going to be interesting. It's like, you know, whether you find a piece of gold or a pebble that's like kind of weirdly shaped, but it might just be a pebble. I don't know. I just feel like anything you throw out there is going to be, I just think you can't have such grand expectations, obviously. And I'm sure like these people, like scientists and people that actually are doing this stuff every day know that, but anything you get back, I mean, you're trying to cast a pretty wide net, and whatever you can come back with, should be like celebrated and research.
Totally. With such a little resources as well, you know, we are not spending that as much money on it.
Yeah.
Trying to sort things out here first, which makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really excited about some of the things that have come out in the last few years regarding video released by different military organizations. So there's the Mexican Air Force. I use this as my profile pic on our band Slack. I don't know if you noticed that, but it is a...
I don't know if I knew. That's what it was.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would know unless you're a fucking giant nerd, which I think we both are. But the Mexican Air Force was given some high-tech infrared cameras to use to catch drug traffickers, I think was the reason that the U.S. lent the equipment or gave the equipment. Mm-hmm. But they followed these craft or orbs or whatever they are off the coast that weren't visible in our visible light spectrum but showed up on the infrared spectrum. Mm. So that's a pretty breathtaking video, and it's pretty crazy to just watch them follow along with it. And I haven't read anything that was a very great quote-unquote debunking of it.
Yeah.
But that was a huge one, and that kind of lends itself to the idea that our understanding of the material of these craft may not be so rigid and earthly, you know, cause maybe they're popping in and out of dimensions. Like, what the fuck, you know, we have no idea.
I mean, it would explain how they can travel in the first place, such large distances. I mean, we assume it's a vast, or a long distance, you know, they'd have to be from somewhere that's not close,
but so far light years away. Like, I think the closest planet, I'm not even going to guess. So that was like, but it's many, many light years, and that's how long far light travels in a year's time. Like, that's so fucking fast and crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would have to be something that we just can't explain for that to even be able to be here at all. Another common theme that I saw a lot, and especially the Stephen Greer book, is that a lot of it, there were a lot of instances where people unrelated were saying how a lot of the craft seemed almost like organic in nature, and
almost
not,
like some kind of living thing.
Yeah. Or it was like part
reimagined.
I think that it was a big thing that was in that book, was that, the like things that looked like pieces of a suit or something were actually more so, could be like a material that was, could possibly be organic, in that they didn't see how it could also be like a metal or something, because it's also just stuff that like we just probably made of things that we just don't have
or
in some way. I don't know. I'm not doing it justice exactly, but the idea that you could see something and it not be, people just, I think a lot of me too just would assume it's just a piece of floating metal. But it could be, it could be anything
that we can't even possibly begin to comprehend.
Yeah, and could be, it's probably a good idea just to stay open to the fact that it could be not man-made.
Yeah,
well,
totally. Some kind of, that's trippy as hell. Imagine just like, you know, that scene at the end of Men in Black when the aliens playing marbles and the thing that was around, they were chasing after the, you don't get a spoiler because the movie's been out for like 20 years.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the end.
Yeah, also if you haven't seen Men in Black, fuck you.
Yeah.
My favorite movie. I'll take that as a personal attack. It's not my favorite movie, but
it's pretty great though.
It's
and I
so
feel
good.
Like it's one of those things where it's like, it's another common theme in that book where he would say, like, a lot of people say, like, you know, this is another hard pill to swallow, but like the tabloids and stuff like that you see, like that's like, that's purposely put there because it's like
one of my favorite parts of it. Yeah.
Made to look, just made to decredit or, you know, just be like, create like a very hokey stigma around it. But in Men in Black, it's like, it's just like a tabloid.
Yeah.
At to life. And it's,
that's
like,
how they find out what's actually happening is by checking tabloids, but we just write it all off because it's
hilarious,
so insane.
Concept.
Yeah. I love that. That's so fucking funny.
Like Marilyn Monroe gets killed because she knew about aliens or whatever, but that's like, there's legitimate like stuff around that. That's actually like really interesting.
I went down the Marilyn Monroe rabbit hole, for sure before, with the way that the door was locked, the medicine that she had in her system, all that's kind of, you know, what a dark, event. But yeah, I could see where some of those conspiracies came around, especially, you know, knowing both Kennedy brothers, like,
yeah,
all that shit.
There's a lot. I mean, yeah, do your own research on that. But there's a lot of stuff around that that's pretty interesting. You know,
it's insane. Oh, but yeah, the living thing. So at the end of Men in Black, they have the marble that they were chasing after the entire time, which was actually just another galaxy that was within the thing that was around the cat's neck that they were protecting.
Yeah.
And yeah, imagine that, as above, so below, you know, like the alien is there. What if like there's just massive single-celled organisms just floating around in a dimension right next to ours that are just you get trippy real fast.
Yeah, I mean, think you know, it's all kind of relevant in that way. Like an ant, they're not conscious thinkers like we are. I don't think, but I don't know. But I don't know why I said that. But I just basically like you know, we're giant. I don't know why can't there be something a bigger creature? Like we're, do you think we're the biggest?
Yeah,
creatures even totally. Like how is that possible?
Speaking of megalophobia,
think about whales.
Yeah, I was about to say. Speaking of megalophobia, like things that are bigger than you make it terrifying. Some of the USO incidences are some of the most compelling evidence that's out there, where you have mobilized entire groups. There's one in the up in Canada, and one of the sounds up there where a giant object was seen submerging from the water and then emerging back down into the water, and yeah. It was chased after by, you know, fucking submarines and shit. Like that's crazy and horrifying.
Yeah, I think about like if you see those like books when you were a kid where like they'd show like a whole page of like sea animals or sea creatures and like what they would be in, like they'd have like a human next to it and how big. And I just think about like fish that look like tiny fish that are huge,
so, like
that are like
sturgeons?
The size of like school buses,
yeah.
But they just look like fish you'd like fish in a pond, but they're just that big. And yeah. I think about that and I'm like, that is probably to me one of the most terrifying things. If you were just swimming and saw anything that size, how like terrifying that would
oh
be.
Yeah, I gotta make a confession, as unlikely and kind of absurd it is, that's like my biggest fear. I fucking hate fairies. I hate swimming in lakes where the water's all brown. I hate like doing all that shit because the unknown is just so jarring to me from my senses, a sensational point of view. I'm like fuck that. Imagine if you were on a ferry and a thing showed up underneath it that was as big as the boat.
Yeah, no, that's not cool.
Fuck that.
Yeah, not cool. I would be terrified. I thankfully don't also have that fear. I have extreme fear of flying that have been better at coping with lately, but it's still really intense.
Yeah, of the journey, which is unfortunate because of how often that we fly. But I got to say, over the last 10 or so years, you've gotten so much better at flying.
Yeah, I hate it. But Tom has a fear of, you have a fear of...
large like, objects in the water, yeah.
Yeah, like more open water scenarios, which doesn't... So, like, yeah, I don't know, but
it would be cool if I could wear a life
understand.
Vest the whole time that we're on the ferry. I would like that.
Yeah,
but I'll
no,
go out on boats and lakes
reasonable.
And shit like that, but I don't know. Yeah, something about it. And I follow this subreddit called thalassophobia. I think that's the actual word for it, and submechanophobia. So submechanophobia is a fear of giant mechanical objects underwater, like sunken ships and shit like that.
Oh, wow.
Not that scary. Just
scary that
looking.
Like they're gonna come back as like ghost ships.
I guess, yeah, or just like their existence. You know, you ever get into it? You ever have a dream where you're like in a car and no one's driving? Or
I have a dream a lot that I'm naked in high school. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll have dreams where the proportions of my body versus the world around change them. Like that episode, like that level in Mario. Mario 3.
Oh, yeah.
Where everything's real big. Sometimes it'll just happen in a dream, and that's, like, jarring. I think maybe that's what it is. Like, underwater, you see shit that's like not supposed to be, you know, big.
Yeah, no, I get that for sure. I used to get panic attacks a long time ago from, like, just drinking a lot of coffee without eating anything in the morning yet and having a lot of sugar in my coffee, and I don't put sugar in my coffee anymore. But I used to have these crazy panic attacks because of it, and certain things would just make like freak me out. Like I would think about like huge objects, and so I know what you mean, and that would like make my brain just like melt. I would be like, no, I can't, like anything big. Yeah, it's weird. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's fucking freaky, man. But yeah, the USO shit where they say that they've seen objects under the water that were so big. I think one of the people that Stephen Greer had brought together for one of the books was on a aircraft carrier and said that they had spotted something that was like twice the size of the aircraft carrier, or was like the aircraft carrier size and diameter, and came out of the water and just disappeared into the sky.
It's crazy.
That would be, yeah, I'd probably quit everything I was doing.
I mean,
out into the woods.
It'd be hard to see something at that scale, not even just size scale, but just something that like unimaginable, like scale of just not being able to explain.
Yeah.
And then go back to like
to regular.
Yeah. Well, I'm just gonna like
Yeah.
Go
How
to
do
the
you
mall.
Wait on hold with a customer service representative after you've seen a several thousand foot alien craft exit the Pacific Ocean and fly out to the stars?
And that's almost the natural like barricade involved in this kind of like stuff when you do like personal, like we do just like personal research, you know, we're not going presenting our findings and things we see in books to like anything. Yeah. I just read books about this stuff because I think it's cool. And, you know, there are people that take it to another plane, but I don't know. That's just,
I'd like to say that we do due diligence of reading sources that are maybe have an opposite viewpoint or try to debunk it, but I don't really do that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that like I just feel like I have a natural barricade where I'm like not going to go too far, because then how do you live in a society? How do you like cope in a society where you're just like, well, none of this means shit because there's some crazy shit happening that like, and that can be in politics or anything else.
Totally.
Like, it's really hard. Like, I think you need just a natural like barricade just to like stop yourself from going too far.
I think that self-awareness that is something that a lot of people don't have, or maybe we don't even have. Maybe I don't have. I don't know. But you always think that your outlook on the world is at least somewhat correct. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to function in it.
Or you just naturally develop one that makes sense.
Yeah. And then you remember that people on next to you, like people who are next to us on the bus today, could be just so fucking crazy. One time I was in line getting a hoagie at Cosme's, and the guy behind me, we were just making small talk, and he was one of those sovereign citizen people. Have you ever seen any people with their YouTube videos or fallen into that? I guess I would call it a conspiracy theory section of thinking. Mm-hmm. There's people who believe...
Actually, no, I have no idea.
Oh, it's wild. They believe this. Maybe they're right. I don't know. But their interpretation of U.S. law and just, I guess, in general, has all these bizarre little twists and turns involving like wood in courtrooms and things being boats and nautical law. So basically, they feel like they can lawfully argue their way out of anything, whether it be taxes or police stopping or anything like that. They're just like, well, no, I'm a sovereign citizen because I've declared I'm a sovereign citizen. I doubt there's any people who are part of the sovereign citizen movement listening to the podcast. But maybe they'll throw in some hate, or maybe they'll clarify it for us. But this guy was fucking wild. He was just being like, you don't, if you just say this or carry this card, and he handed me like a little card. He's like, you don't have to pay your taxes. You don't have to do all these things. And that guy's just walking around, going to the bank, you know, like getting a hoagie. And I get it. I mean, but you can't stop a cop from like, you know, arresting you and throwing you in jail. You're not
I
big
mean, a
enough.
A lot of
you know,
people
you know,
have tried.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Fucking
work.
Shoot him? I mean, you could.
Yeah.
It's not going to work out well for anybody.
I didn't know that was a thing or a movement, but that's
now that I've said intense. It, you might stumble upon some YouTube videos or some shit on Reddit where somebody's like getting pulled over and has their cell phone out and then just goes into this ramble and you're like, damn. And that's just one of the small examples of how fucking crazy the person next to you may be.
Yeah. I haven't like even like told this story at all, but recently when we were on our flight back from London, when we came back from the tour, I had an experience where, like, you know, I like to try to surround myself with people who aren't crazy or going to like be weird. Like, you know, it's easy when you walk down the street and you see somebody coming at you that's like obviously like you want to not mess with or whatever, but you try to like navigate it all and stay away from any sort of danger or somebody that's a little crazy or whatever. But I fell asleep on the plane and I woke up and I looked over and there was an empty seat next to me and there was a guy in the window and he was just a guy traveling by himself. He's probably like late 40s, early 50s, whatever. And I had headphones in and he was like motioning me to like take my headphones off. He was like trying to talk and I was like, oh, what does he want? And the lights are all off in the plane and everything. And I pull out the thing and I look over and I'm like, yeah, what's up? And he was just like, you know, you slept like most of the flight. That's a really good idea. Cause then, you know, you'll be able to just go through your day. And then basically telling me that like, and I was just like, dude, what? like, and then I just had immediately had this like image of him like watching me sleep, and I was like, all right, he's probably just that kind of guy that likes to talk. And like, I am not the kind of person that will just so readily like talk to strangers or just comment on how I noticed that they were sleeping on a plane. You know, it's maybe a boundary you don't cross with people.
Bring it up.
Yeah. Or bring it up, even if I did notice it. But, so I was like, yeah, man, so whatever. So I put my stuff back in and I just tried to like zone out and just, get through the rest of the flight. And so we land and we had to go to the customs, like carnet, it's called.
Yeah, we have this thing called a carnet, which is like an agreement that it's how we move equipment around legally.
Yeah, and so we basically, you have to like go to a desk and just claim that you have this stuff, and it's for tax purposes and all this stuff that we do. Yeah, it's just another import, level of
guardianship,
like travel bullshit that we have to deal with the amount of equipment and stuff we travel with.
Yeah.
So we had to get to this desk, and we're the only people waiting at that desk, and I turn around, and who's else is fucking there but this guy? So
it was, I remember that guy.
Yeah, that was him.
He's a bizarre guy.
He was a bizarre guy. And then in the light, like I said, the plane lights were off and everything. And in the light of the bright fluorescence of the airport, I noticed that he had I don't want to judge. I hate being like this, but it's important that I were at least aware of.
A little story spice.
Yeah. He had like stains on him. And I was just like, you're a grown man. Like, why do you have stains all over your shirt? He was like put together well enough, but then there were these signs that he may have been a little, like, I don't know, different. And he's noticed all the equipment, and he was like, oh, you guys are really like, oh, you traveling? And I was like, yeah, we're all part of the group. I was like, I'm with them, so don't fuck with me. You know, I have people with me. I don't know. And, he's like, cool. Yeah. And I said, we're in a band and we have equipment. It was obvious then, we had the guitars and stuff. And then I was just like, what is this guy doing in this line? Like, why does he need to be in the carnet line or the customs? And he said that, he's like, yeah, you're like a banana and an apple, and they brought me here. And I was like, bullshit, dude, you don't have a banana and an apple. Like, why? And I was like, all right, man, we'll have a good day. And then we left, and I was still right now thinking like why he was flagged.
An entire bag of bananas.
Yeah, like banana smuggler.
Yeah.
But I was like, really, a banana? I don't know, man. You could have just thrown that away.
Yeah, I don't believe that for one second.
So then I was like, hell yeah, prove my theory. He's up to some shit.
Yeah, he's a
pat
weirdo.
Pat myself on the back. Validated my...
Yeah, and back to the original point, those people walk among us all day. You know? There's so many fucking wild-ass people.
Yeah.
So keeping our own ideas and stuff in check is like a nice down-to-earth, you know.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a little caveat, a little remembrance.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Hell yeah. Well, I think that we should probably do this again.
Yeah. Hey.
Maybe we test drive. We can test drive that idea of we like rip off like some of those true crime podcasts. Instead of doing true crime, we'll do like you know, a supernatural event or a UFO thing. We can kind of like tell the story of it. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let's take it on the road.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Can you imagine going on tour with no overhead?
Right.
And not just like money overhead. I mean like logistical overhead. Imagine if we could just get off of a plane, go to a hotel room, and then go to a place, do a show, and then leave.
That'd be nice. The amount we travel and the amount of logistics involved in the way we travel, it's that common question we get. It's like, it must be so nice to go to all these places. And you're like, well, I was in Stockholm for about 10 hours.
Yeah.
I didn't see shit.
Yeah.
You know, just using Stockholm as an example. So it's like the idea of traveling in a different way is like amazing, especially to us.
Because
to actually be in one place for an extended period of time and actually being able to do it for another purpose rather than the one that we are very fortunate to be able to do, but can become stressful and you know, you don't get to
totally. Or you talk to a family member and they're like, hey, but I saw you was in St. Louis last night, how was that? And you're like, well, the parking lot a half hour outside the city next to the strip mall was lovely.
Yeah, it was great. I saw the skyline, it looked fine.
Yeah, it was gray.
Yeah, it was raining. I don't know, I didn't leave the room. What do you
mean? Not shit talking St. Louis. I love St. Louis. We have to be very careful not to shit talk places. You ever notice that? Yeah. One time
we gotta love every city that we ever go
to. Yeah, it's so fucking funny.
All Chicago.
Totally. And it's funny because in private we'll talk about how fucking shitty they are, but it's also just like ball busting ourselves or like getting into the, I do feel like on tour with the crew and band, all of us together, so like, you know, 10 people, will often make up a common enemy that we can all rally against, and that actually improves morale, whether it's a city that we're on our way to that we actually like, but for some reason we're like, oh, it's gonna fucking suck there.
Yeah. And it has taken me so many times back to a city to finally like it. I used to, full disclosure here, I love Texas now. I love it so much.
Texas
is
awesome. I used
to not like Texas because we would just go through it. We'd have to drive really far through it to get to the cities we were playing, either from the east or west. We'd have long hauls. It would always be hot. We were traveling in... our first van didn't have like
no AC,
air conditioning.
Yeah.
So we would take so long to get to these places, and then you get there and then you play and you have to leave. So I remember like San Antonio, which now I'm like, San Antonio's an awesome city. But at the time I was like, I don't like San Antonio. Cause we stayed, we just went to the place where the show was and then we left. We didn't get to see anything.
Yeah.
So I'm glad.
No Alamo.
Yeah. Nothing.
Not that little river that runs right next to everything.
It's beautiful. And so I'm glad now that we've been able to go back to so many places. Cause otherwise I would just have this taste in my mouth of a certain place that was just not great and not really true to the actual place.
For sure.
So that's another benefit. We at least get to go back to places to build a love for them.
It's awesome. And if it is dangerous, you could kind of just like we said, steamroll through the universe waiting for people to hand you things. You could kind of just not even be cognizant of where you are. If you're on the bus until, you know, there's been times where I would sleep until 2 or 3 p.m., get up, you sound check, then do whatever other shit we got to do, the press, roll around, practice, play the show, roll off with some friends there. Then you get to bed at like 5 a.m. again. You realize that you didn't experience the city at all.
Yeah.
You kind of have to make a conscious effort, which is, you know, a great thing. And it's awesome that we get to do that. But
yeah,
it could get easy, especially if you're on one.
Yeah.
Which we've both been in the past where you're like, hey, 3 days went by and I drank a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That was always like, also on the flip side of that, I would end up like loving some places like so much
because of the bar that was there.
Yeah. Because of how drunk I was.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh man, X city is amazing. I'm like, why is it so amazing? You know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. It is funny that you mentioned Texas too, because I feel like there was a couple spots in Texas that we were just like, ugh, like El Paso.
Yeah.
Which now I love.
Yeah, totally. Now we've been there enough now where I'm just like, oh, this place is great.
I still got Houston. We could put it in a little bit more work in Houston, maybe.
Yeah.
It's the fourth largest city in the country, but we don't draw that many people there. It's like one of our smallest show places. So it's funny to think of it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of an enigma for us. We're just like, this is a great, huge place. I don't know. Buy some more damn tickets, Houston.
Yeah. Right.
Come on.
Hell. Fucking hell.
I want to keep going so we can go to NASA.
Yeah, exactly. We met some friends in Houston that took us on a tour. We got to tell the story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we
got to have the NASA dudes.
I know, man. It's been one of my goals for years. I got to talk to Cam and Casey and those guys. So we got hit, you know, made the connection through Twitter for, I forget exactly how it was. I think I was talking to Cam about it.
Yeah.
Or I gave him my number. I don't know. Whatever. We linked up through the internet in a beautiful way.
And yeah, we met like a few dudes who are like our age.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit younger. I'm not positive.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit younger.
Who work for NASA, and we became friends, and they like our band and we love NASA.
Yeah, and we got to go to NASA. And unfortunately, fucking Dave couldn't come because he wasn't a U.S. citizen. So it was like, we didn't need, you know, any type of clearance or anything like that, but it was like background check shit. And we get to Houston, what's the NASA thing called? I'm blanking. Space Center. Not the Kennedy Space Center. It's in Florida. Or maybe what? I forget. Well, so wow, we get there, and the original the Apollo mission control room is there, intact. We get to go and take a fucking tour of it and hang out in there and take pictures with it. The actual mirror that they used on the outside of Apollo 13 remember that scene in the movie where they like guided the guidance system back using that? Mm-hmm. They put that above the water fountain in the room so all the engineers in there can like, you know, look at it and be reminded of what they're doing and why they're there. We got to go see some of the prototypes that they were looking into as far as delivering people to the space station after they retired the shuttle. We got to go inside the fucking space shuttle. We got to go into, remember when we got to go into the actual mission control observation room where they let like congressmen and like big donors
in, like,
and shit.
The press room. They had a live press conference from an astronaut in space.
Yeah,
at
dude
the time
comes
at
up
the
on
ISS.
The screen.
They were doing long term. It was the
I think
first.
It was Chris Kelly.
Yeah, bald guy, right?
Like, you believe so. Yeah, he was in space for like a year
to test the long-term effects of humans in space, because eventually we'll probably have to do that.
Yeah.
or just for research purposes, go up there for longer periods of time. And they were testing that, and he was in the middle of his mission, and he was doing a live press conference with like MSNBC or CNN or something, and they were feeding it, and we were in the room watching them basically communicate with him live.
It was incredible.
On this huge screen, and we were sitting behind this glass in this like press room and looking into the mission control of them live having this conversation with him. We were just like, what? That was to me the craziest thing I've
That was fucking nuts. We were just in it, in the shit. It was incredible.
That was amazing.
The other parts of the complex had, they had like a fully assembled, I think it was a Saturn V rocket, one of the large rockets in that warehouse. We just got to go check it out and walk around, and it was so big.
Yeah.
That was something, man. That was one of the coolest things we ever did. We were in one of the rooms where they have a the ISS assembled and like a modular assembly of the ISS.
Yeah, yeah. You can like crawl through it.
Yeah, we were there, and we had to leave because they were bringing astronauts in to solve a potential problem or run some kind of drill.
Yeah.
So up on the actual ISS. So they have one down and that they like test shit out on before they give the astronauts
like
the directions up there.
It's like a full interactive like model of the actual ISS, essentially. And
so
they can just like use it to train on the ground as they would exactly how they're there.
Man, that was, I want to hit those guys up and go again. I believe Casey operated the Canada arm, which is the robotic arm that's attached to the ISS that they use to, I don't know, fucking grab things.
Well, they send on rockets, like they'll send shipments of supplies and stuff.
Yeah.
And they'll basically throw it up into space and
grab
this huge arm that's the size of like a building.
Yeah.
A mechanical arm goes and grabs these like crates or whatever they put them in. And our friend that works there is in charge of, not in charge, well, I don't know what he does, but he works on that arm.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
Crazy. Like, and I'm sure he does. I don't even know what he does now. He still works there. So he's probably gotten up, in his responsibilities. And Cam's job was fucking crazy too. I believe that he was working in material sciences. This is what I gleaned from his explanation of his job. So forgive me, but he basically works on computer models with engineers all day, trying to make, the thermodynamic shielding on the different things be more efficient. So like work better and weigh less. He just sits there. I mean, that's fucking crazy.
That's
cool.
Crazy. Yeah. That's, it's really cool. And the fact that they're like younger too, it's just like so cool to have like a conversation with dudes who like work within this and they're just like your
having
age.
A couple beers that night at
the
show.
We went out to like
awesome.
A bar after the show and just like hung out. And I'm just like, we have to get up and just like drive to another show. Like you guys have to go work at space.
You have to go
so
work
sick.
With astronauts at NASA.
And I guess you always have this image of people that work in those things of being like older, like so crazy experienced and just like, you know, have the, like, there's like a physical even look I that comes to mind, but they're just like kids.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Cool. Casey's actually a great photographer. I like following him on Instagram.
So cool.
Pretty
great,
rad.
Great dudes.
Is Houston back? Houston's back.
Well, Houston's back.
Yeah,
that's
Houston
what I'm saying.
Was never gone. You're right. See, every time we talk shit on a city, it's never true. There's always like incredible parts of it.
It's true. Yeah. It's hard to just remove the negative like first experiences or whatever from your mind. And then you're just like, wait, I've had so many great times there. Everywhere's back. Everywhere's cool.
Yeah, that's true. And not even just giving lip service to everybody. Like, it is fun to have the common enemy to, like, rail again. There was one place we were in on the European tour, I forget exactly where it was, where it was like, this is going to fucking suck. But we ended up, you know, like,
yeah, it's a guy waved in.
Hell yeah. But it's, you know, they're always fucking great. And we're going to play a show, and all the people who come to see us want to see us. You know, we have our clunker off days. We did get stuck in Salinas, Kansas for, like, 4 days once.
Yeah.
That was rough.
Yeah, it was rough. We had fun. I think the best part, and I will say this, like, and I think this sums it up, so there really is no shit talk on any city, because one of the best things we get to do is we get to go to the Chicagos and the LAs all the time, and those cities are amazing. We also just get to go to places that we would never have normally gotten to go for or be in for any reason.
Ever. For There's, no reason
and
at
I,
all.
And I can't think of like the exact places off the top of my head, but there are so many places. And the fact that we have gotten to experience so many smaller towns or places off the path in different states, countries, everywhere, that is the coolest thing. So that's what I mean by everything is great. Because it really just is. You get to just see so many places and experience so many places that you should never normally be in.
Totally. Like, what would the all group of us ever be doing in Ashland, Oregon?
Yeah.
Or Macclesfield. We spent several days in Macclesfield in the UK. Like, what the fuck? Why would I ever
Manchester.
Be there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Love that place and those things. And it's just we're really lucky and it's been a fucking great journey. Sucks that it all has to end.
I'm quitting.
Joe's quitting right now. He's taking a job at NASA.
Oh man,
community. You can do communication shit, right? I mean, think about it.
I get, yeah.
You're good at talking to people. You're on a podcast right now.
That's true. This is my resume.
Yeah.
NASA.
Give us a podcast, two idiots.
That big arm in space. That thing's cool.
That catches stuff.
They're like, all right.
Well,
I can name it. I'll name it.
Yeah.
They're NASA.
Fuck yeah.
Come up with funny names.
They've got a NASA. That's like the idea that there's just people in rooms that just come up with shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember after September 11th happened and they were like, yeah, they're hiring all movie producers to come up with terrorist scenarios. We could be those people.
Yeah. I could come up with some crazy shit if you wanted me to.
NASA, do you need a jingle?
Yeah. They got a brand. They got a like...
Yeah, they need to. They do have a brand. People wear NASA jackets and shit. I wore a NASA jacket yesterday.
NASA's huge now. Yeah, it's like all over Urban Outfitters. You can buy like NASA t-shirts and stuff.
That.
It's crazy.
Which is a great. I hope that interest comes back, especially with, you know, that they're going to do. So some of the prototype stuff that they were sending people out into space with, well, that they built that we got to like take our pictures in front of and shit. Mm-hmm. They're actually now, SpaceX is going to deliver astronauts to the ISS this year. So we've been.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think there's three or four companies that are going to put people into space this year, like space tourism and shit.
Yeah, I mean,
Virgin Galactic, SpaceX, there's like a Boeing thing.
Damn, we could be like the flight attendants.
Oh my God.
Let's get in on that.
Yeah, that would be fucking cool.
I always thought my biggest thing could help not being afraid of flying is becoming a flight attendant and just having to like do it all the time, one, and two, like having a purpose while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Like I'd be up walking around like too busy about, you know, making somebody coffee and to not care about turbulence. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't care about this fucking turbulence. I got to get this guy his coffee or he's gonna be pissed.
I think that's the right. I mean, that's like what we call exposure therapy.
Yeah.
Just being exposed to it. You just have to get used to it eventually.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be a pilot because I don't take way too long. And yeah. I don't want to be responsible for that many people.
Yeah. I bet you could do it. I'd let you fly me around.
Really?
If you knew how to do it. Yeah.
I got a steady hand, right? I got a surgeon hand.
It's shaking.
It's just like shaking. I've also had like three cups of coffee already.
So space flight attendants, that's our backup plan when the ban. What would your backup plan be if, God forbid, the ban went away?
Oh, geez.
If people stopped listening to music.
Oh, I don't think about this ever. I never think about this. Oh, man, that's tough because there's a very fine line between things I would want to do and then hopefully be able to do.
Yeah, true.
Not that I'm not able to do anything. You're all able to do whatever you want.
Yeah, right, the American fucking lie.
We're all so smart.
Our generation got fucked by that.
I don't know. I would really like to do something in film. In some capacity, from the smallest job to potentially the biggest, anything involving that would be really cool. Yeah. It's always been like the second passion of mine.
That's been a super unique and attractive part of your personality is your ability to recall facts about film, your knowledge about film, and your love for it. It's pretty sick. I could see you doing
that
for sure.
Yeah, I love it. It's like it takes up a lot of time. If I realize it or not, I'm always thinking about it or recalling things I love it. It's
totally.
I think that would be cool.
I could see you doing that. Should be sick. If you're listening to this and you like film and you want Joe to do something for you, email.
Hire me.
Hire him. Yeah.
I'll make a business card. Film guy.
Right? You know,
Punk
I went to
finds film.
Punk finds film.
And Buddha. It's a very
that
specific
could be,
job.
So if anybody wants to write a half true biopic. I always want to say biopic.
What is it?
I don't know, man. Biopic makes a lot more sense.
Biopic sounds like a procedure.
Yeah, it sounds like a word I would use that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that would be like something. I love you, Kaylee, but I talk a lot of shit about stuff I don't know. And she's like, you know, just do your research first.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I think the thing is here, I know a lot of shit. You know a lot of shit. It's just, you know, you get a lot of spice and a little flavor.
Yeah, it's hard to filter.
A little black, yeah. Think about how many hours we've spent at venues and bars where all anyone can do is talk shit.
Yeah.
Talking shit forever.
Totally.
Yeah. But if anybody out there wants to write, produce Joe's biopic.
Yeah.
Where he becomes, where he meets Buddha and gets into film and goes on a journey and somehow ends up in like wine country.
Yeah.
That's how those things usually, that's the color palette.
I'll end up in Italy at some point.
You end up in Italy.
There has to be something Italian in there because.
You're just watching a boat sail away.
Yeah.
From the cliffs of Calabria.
while I make my olive oil. That's like, you know, that new like Picard show that's on where he's just like, I haven't seen it yet, but the trailer leads me to believe where he's just like Captain Picard. He's like done with space travel and he's just retired like on a farm or something. I don't know. That's me. Ooh. After all of my travels.
Yeah.
In space as a space flight attendant.
Yeah.
I just
retire as a space flight attendant.
Retire to my olives.
Yeah, I bet. I like that. I think that imagery of you stomping olives while you're watching another space thing.
Yeah.
Plane go into space where you had so many connections to.
Yeah, yeah. One
while
tier.
like a Rise Against song comes on the classic radio station in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the final image of your movie. I think that's a good place to wrap up the old podcast as well.
I love it. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it so much. For all you guys out there listening, if you want to get at me or Joe, you can get at me at tom@futurefriday.net. If you want to talk to Joe, how should I get in touch with you?
Through Tom.
You could come to me and I'll be the arbiter of your connection.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of ups the level a bit and makes you more high profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
I back that.
Everything's filtered through Tom.
Yeah. I'll be your agent. I don't charge commission. Great. I just use it to control you.
Except when we get this picture deal.
Yeah. Then I'll
charge
a little bit.
You can get in on that for sure.
Yeah. Hell yeah. But thanks so much for being here with me. I can't wait till we do it again. We got to do that, that UFO thing. It'll be sick.
Yes. On the road.
On the road. Hell
Let's
yeah. Bye bye.
See ya.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.